I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Fort Hunter Liggett Army Reserve Base in Monterey County. Come along and join me to discover how Fire Captain Devin Hagee instituted whole blood pre-hospital transfusion capability in the field, on base, and in the surrounding civilian rural communities. Fort Hunter Liggett is the first Army installation in America to include the capability to provide whole blood to injured soldiers and civilians. Hagee said the game-changing trauma tool was instituted as a result of working with Dr. Major Nicholas Studer, physician scientist at the U.S. Army Institute of Surgical Research at Joint Base San Antonio, Fort Sam Houston, Texas. Devin Hagee.
Good morning. My name is Captain Hagee. I am a Fire Emergency Services personnel at Fort Hunter Liggett. The Fort Hunter Liggett EMS coordinator coordinated a bunch of different levels of service throughout the new Surgeon General U.S. Army program that has been established about a year ago is when it started coming out with op orders for this program.
Are you certified paramedic?
Yeah, so I'm a paramedic, considered one of the OG paramedics here. I got hired here back in 2008. We established the ALS program in 2009 from there, and we've been—
In ALS?
Advanced Life Support, so paramedics. So we have an ambulance, we have engines that are both ALS, which is Advanced Life Support. Mm-hmm. We do transport patients that are within sight of our military base. We transport those patients to local emergency departments within the county of Monterey and also county of San Luis Obispo.
In addition to ground transport, it follows that you would work closely with Mercy Air for medevac helo extraction.
Yeah. So Mercy Air currently is our contract medical evac. In the event that we do have to fly the patient out, we would utilize their services to fly the patient out. Sure. They also do carry blood products. They do not carry whole blood, which we do. They have components.
Talk to us about the whole blood initiative, because this is new. You guys are the first military installation in America to go there?
Yeah, we are the first military base that has whole blood as part of a fire emergency response, so an ambulance response system in the nation. We're also the first in California to have this ability to give blood transfusions in the field. It's not new. This program was established out of San Antonio, Texas. From there, they established the benefit of having whole blood within the metropolitan area of San Antonio. That's where we developed our plan from and built our model off the San Antonio model.
So when we were active in Iraq and Afghanistan, mm-hmm. there was that capability with the paramedics there on mm-hmm. the ground, yeah?
Yeah, so it's a military product that has been tested in theater that is now able to be given to the civilian side of the population, as well as soldiers that are here training at Hunter Liggett.
Interesting how out of military mission comes advances in life support and medical delivery for the civilian.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's coming down the pipe that I would love to have, but it has not been released by the or cleared by the FDA for us to have in the field.
Give us a 1A tutorial about the whole blood transfusion and why that's a game changer and what it entails.
Yeah, so anytime that a patient is in shock due to loss of blood, that can be medical or trauma, the patient has the inability to transfer oxygen from their lungs into their vital organs, into their brain, and all the other components that your body needs to survive and to live.
And part of that is compounded with blood loss, correct?
100%, yeah. So blood loss, and then when you start showing the signs of hypovolemic shock, your body's trying to compensate for that loss of blood. So if we can provide one unit of blood, which is oxygenated, which has all the components, the clotting factors, has all that ability in the field, that means we're gonna buy that patient that extra little bit of time to get them transported into a trauma surgeon. A trauma patient, the only true correction to save their life is a trauma surgeon. We can't do that in the field. We're not opening people up and giving them surgery to stop the bleed wherever it is internally. This is a product that buys us that additional time that hopefully we can keep them out of shock and that they don't go into traumatic arrest and then eventually they're going to be deceased.
Talk to us about stability and how you maintain and retain that whole blood ready to rock and roll?
Okay. Yeah, so right now our blood is not considered civilian blood. So our blood does not come from the blood bank. It does not come from Red Cross. We're not taking from the local supply at all. So that is not affecting the local quality or quantity of blood.
So you have on base a blood donor events then, it follows.
We don't, but it would be great if we did.
Yeah.
So our blood is coming from ASWOBL, so it's an Armed Forces Blood Bank. Mm-hmm. It's a national program that has one on the West Coast, East Coast. I think their main one's centrally located too. It's the military's blood bank where they'll ship blood all over the world. So when we have conflict in theater, they're the ones that are putting the coolers of blood on the C-17s or C-130s and shipping it over to the trauma surgeons or whatever military hospital that are setting up.
So it's chilled, it's cool in transport.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So our blood is taken just like any other blood bank. They process it at a armed services blood bank. So mm-hmm. it's just like a blood center that you go in for your donation and you get there and they draw you the units of blood. From there, they test it to make sure that there's no issues with it. That's where they find the low titer. So if it's a low antibodies, that's what we're looking for, because low antibodies will allow the patient to receive the blood and not have any reactions to that blood. From there, it goes into the military blood bank. We are supported by ASWOBL West, which is out of Travis Air Force Base at the first of the month. And then at the 14th of the month, we're supplied from Hawaii. There's a military hospital over in Hawaii that will be supplying us the unit on the 14th of the month. So the blood product itself, we call it harvested or taken. From there, it's processed. And then once it's good to go, it's approved. We receive the shipment of blood by FedEx Express overnight. It's packaged in a Collins box, which is just a cardboard box. And inside that is a white styrofoam cooler. The unit of blood's in there in its own package. And then there's 14 pounds to 16 pounds of ice that goes with it.
What temperature is it?
Yeah, so blood, when it's transported through, when it's considered in transportation, it needs to maintain between 1 and 10 degrees Celsius. That's during transportation.
Right.
When we get the blood here, we scan it in, we make sure there's no issues with it, we check the temperature of it to make sure that it's within that range that we want, and then we are holding ourselves within 1 and 6 degrees Celsius, which that is considered a storage for any blood bank has to hold blood between 1 and 6 degrees Celsius, and it has to be monitored. So what we do is the blood shows up, we make sure it's scanned in, we sign it in, and then it goes into a military cooler is what it is. The best explanation of this cooler is kind of like a Yeti cooler with an insert. So you pull out the insert, you throw it in the freezer, it stays in the freezer for 8 to 24 hours. We pull it out of the freezer, and that cooler stays at room temperature for 20 minutes. If we put the blood in too soon, we're actually going to spike the blood to the negative. We're going to go below 1 degree Celsius because that cooler is too cold for that blood. We put the blood unit in there, and then we also have a product that monitors the temperature for 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365, and it's a data program. So it's constantly taking samples of the relatively or the RH in there, as well as the temperature. So we're always maintaining that temperature between 1 and 6. So when you first change the blood out from the previous cooler, usually it's around 3 degrees Celsius. You put in the new cooler, it drops down to about 2 degrees Celsius, and then you can watch it kind of climb throughout the day. These coolers are rated and approved for 48 hours to change every 48 hours. We don't do that. We like to do it every 24 hours just to maintain that. Oh, did we change it yesterday or the day before? So it's easier for us to maintain just during the normal engine checkout. We're rotating blood from one cooler to another.
A hypothetical scenario. Right now we're at headquarters at the fire department, and you receive a call as a Humvee rollover a couple miles up country.
Yeah.
And you have to respond. So is the blood on board?
Yes. Or? So right now the blood could also be utilized for medical emergencies too. So that's the other thing about it, is it's not just straight for trauma. We can use it for medical emergencies.
Example,
pregnancy. Someone who has a child who has not stopped bleeding, we can give them a unit of blood to keep them alive. Abdominal, like a kind of traumatic abdominal injury. Someone who is like jaundice, who needs to go in and go to dialysis, we can give blood for that. I'd say the medical aspect of delivering blood or the transfusions in the field is less, but it's also utilized in trauma too. That was one of the things that came out of the San Antonio, is they were finding that they're actually giving it more for trauma patients for sure. Mm-hmm. But the utilization of them in the medical calls was actually a lot more than they thought, and these patients most likely would have deceased mm-hmm. if they didn't have units of blood.
Interesting. And again, why is this so distinctive and a first on a military base?
There's a lot of logistics. It's a brand new program, so there's been a lot of administrative paperwork, getting the right units to support us, working with Aswobel West, working with the U.S. Army Surgeon General, getting that all worked out, going through the credentialing period to make sure that this blood that we're bringing, it's a privilege to have this blood, right, for 14 days.
What happens the end of 14 days?
So blood's good for 45 days. We are trying to do a zero waste program, which is my goal, to have zero waste whatsoever. The blood arrives on day number one. Day number 14, we send it back. And it gets sent back to the blood bank. Our blood that's going to be sent out on Thursday is going to go to Hawaii. And then hopefully what they're going to do with that blood bank is they're going to use that unit and cycle it to the front of their capacity.
Got it.
So if the emergency department has a patient that needs that blood, which it's a high valuable blood, they're going to use it first before the ones that are behind it that expire after that date.
Talk for a moment about O positive, because that's central, isn't it?
Yeah, so O positive is definitely the critical factor of it. I don't know the exact stats because I'm not 100% in the blood bank and know how many people out there are considered O positive, O negative, A or B, but it is a critical unit of blood. They use it a lot in trauma surgeons, you know, level one, level two trauma hospitals.
Because what you were saying earlier, you have a patient presents and they're type A.
Mm-hmm.
You can give them O positive.
Yes.
But you can't do the opposite.
Yeah, so that's why we're not giving A or B, because you'd have to actually pull labs and see what they are, because you don't want to have a reaction. And that's why we're utilizing O positive, low titer blood.
So again, here we are at the fire station, mm-hmm. and you have a rig ready to roll, right?
Yep, we're ready to go.
And there's blood on board?
Yep.
And what temperature is it now before you roll out?
Well,
roughly.
Should be right around 2.2 degrees Celsius.
And how do you bring that blood temperature to the level for delivery?
Oh, okay. So we're talking about the transfusion in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we do is we keep the blood chilled. When we arrive on scene, we find a patient that they meet the criteria to administer blood. We'll start an IV. We can also do an IO if need to.
That'd be like a Ringer's lactate or something to get going?
Yeah. So with normal saline or lactate Ringers or any of those, it works to keep the blood pressure, but what's happening is we're diluting the blood that's in there. By diluting the blood, you're limiting the clot factor. Once you have the inability to clot, you're going to bleed out. That's why blood is critical. Mm-hmm. We'll start an IV on the patient. We have special blood tubing. We'll set that up. We prime the system with saline, and then after we prime the system with saline, we'll start running the unit of blood into it.
And again, how did you bring it to the right temperature
moment? So yeah. You have the tubing, and then it goes into an inline warmer, which is kind of the size of a cell phone stacked on top of each other. And what that does is it plugs into a battery, and it's a coil in there that goes around and around and around that has an inner and outer element. It heats the blood coming in, so we could test it, and we can put literally frozen water coming in, and it will come out at 98 degrees. It's a cool system. And that is variable flow. So we have a hand pump on the inline tubing that we can pump the blood in. We also will put the blood in a pressure infuser bag, which will build pressure on that bag to force that blood in.
And giving it a constant pressure, correct?
Giving a constant pressure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you can't get that constant pressure, that inline hand pump, mm-hmm. you can pump the blood in as quick as possible. It only takes a couple minutes, you know, maybe 3 to 8 minutes to really...
For a unit
of blood. Mm-hmm. We're currently only carrying one unit of blood. There are talks about having additional units when the military exercises or the training high-risk up-tempo kicks up, and then we'll have two units, and that'll be dispersed between both ambulances.
Because you can have 10,000 troops training on base
at 100%,
any one time.
Yeah.
So you got to really ramp up for that one.
Got to ramp up and be prepared for it, yeah.
For the worst case.
Yep. And if we have an MCI, well, it's going to be the same thing. It's a hard job that we're going to have to go through the patients and find out who's going to be the best candidate for that one unit of blood.
Let's back up a bit, because I understand that you were frontline seminal involved in making this happen? Mm-hmm. How did it happen? Was it an epiphanous moment on your part? Or?
No, I'm going to say that the team from the U.S. Army Surgeon General, Dean Ross and Major Studer, Dr. Studer, they're the ones that came out last year, maybe a year and a half ago, and they did an assessment of our EMS program here. And they saw how remote we were, how high risk training we have. The closest trauma center is a level 2, and it's a good hour and 10 minutes ground wow. transport.
Is that Salinas?
So Natividad is the level 2 trauma center for Monterey County.
In Salinas.
In Salinas, yeah. So they started talking about it, talking about stuff that they had, and Dr. Studer or Major Studer pretty much said, you know what, you guys would be a really good candidate for whole blood. I'm like, what? No, that's impossible. Like, that's something that California medic would never think about. Whole blood transfusions in the field? Mm-hmm. You're crazy. That's not. He said, no, you totally, we can do it. We can get it. I'm like, all right, well, let's see. I'm game. Let's do it. If I can provide the best care out here, progressive medicine, evidence-based, I'm all for it. Let's do it. So then from there, I went out to San Antonio and did a ride-along with them to experience the whole blood program. That was supported by Chief Toll to kind of say, yeah, let's check this out.
And was that Bexar County EMS civilian, or were you on base?
No, I was within San Antonio Fire Department.
Okay, yeah.
So,
civilian.
Their civilian fire department. Mm-hmm. And Bill Bullock was, they call him the blood guy. He's Mr. Blood over there. Lieutenant Bullock. So I rode with him, and I rode with a couple other guys on their units that they have throughout the city that actually have blood. And seeing the capability and talking to medics who've been medics for a really long time and hearing their stories that this is something that we should have had at the beginning of my career. There are so many patients that died because we didn't have this capability.
Wow.
And that was like, okay, I've had patients that have died that, you know, you try to do everything you can, but when your toolbox is only so small, there's nothing outside of that toolbox you can utilize.
So again, you're the first military installation in America to implement this in the field. Mm-hmm. Going forward, what do you hear as far as other military installations going there too?
So there's other military installations that want it. They totally want it. It's really good, but just like any new program, you got to get buy-off all the way from the top, all the way to the bottom. So the main thing was getting support from our paramedics that we have that are actually going to be the ones implementing and giving the blood transfusions in the field. And also it has to be supported by the base commander as well as the chief. Chief Toll has been very supportive of that. And then everything after that was more just hard work and just keep working ahead and writing protocols and policies and how we're going to account for it and use logs and working with every department possible to figure out the regulations that we need to follow to have this implemented.
So you mentioned San Antonio civilian EMS rolling out with this. How common, how fast is it growing in the civilian population across the country? Do you have a sense?
It's growing. Mm-hmm. When I went back to the Whole Blood Training Academy, there was people from Florida at that training. There was other departments that were like Austin, Texas. There were a couple other fire departments within Texas that they were talking about it.
So again, perfect world looking forward. Does it follow that every level 1 EMS responder in an urban setting will probably be locked and loaded with this capability?
I hope, mm-hmm. but on the civilian side, it's really hard because now you're dealing with blood banks.
To access
the units of the blood. So the logistics of the civilian sector of trying to have this blood to prove to the blood bank that we can take care of it, that we're accountable for the blood, that we're not going to mess it up, that there's quality assurances there, takes two different organizations to come together for one goal. That's going to be the hardest thing for civilian sectors to do that. We're fortunate enough that the military blood is there and we're able to get it. If it was a civilian side, it'd be a lot steeper climb, but possible. It's definitely going to take someone who's dedicated to going, hey, no, we need this. You need your medical director on board. You need the blood bank on board. You need everyone on board to push it. The nice thing about it is the data that's coming out of San Antonio. It's showing a benefit, risk versus gain benefit mm-hmm. on that blood. They've saved countless lives. There's people that didn't survive receiving the blood. but that's medicine. Yeah. There's a lot of gray. There's not black and white.
So your response capability is spot on for on base, but some people might not realize that you are a responder for the surrounding rural communities, and that capability is front row center.
Yeah, so we've been responding off base since 2009. We've been providing ALS services off base, utilizing the Monterey County Emergency Medical Services protocols and policies. Now, this blood capability is outside of that. So we now have a new military medical director, which protocols are joint by the Air Force and Army that are authored by the Surgeon General of the U.S. Army as EMS plan. This capability for whole blood, we currently cannot offer it off base as of today. We have a meeting next week with the county emergency medical services to have an agreement for mutual aid or an automatic aid agreement that will allow us to follow our own protocols to operate off base. Now, that will be next week that we have that meeting. Now, they can say, no, we don't want this capability.
Why would there be any blowback?
I don't think there will be any blowback, you know, because we're definitely offering a very high response capability to a area of Southern Monterey County that is very underserved for EMS. Mm-hmm. We are the only advanced life support ALS paramedics in Southern Monterey County, besides AMR, who has an ambulance in King City. But everything else that's considered ALS is up in Northern Monterey County.
Maybe this is getting a little far afield, but mass casualty event, which is always possible.
100%, yeah.
So what capabilities do you have to ramp up response for a major disaster?
Yes, we have two fire stations that are staffed 24/7.
On base.
On base. A mass casualty on base, you know, all our assets will definitely be started, including the air contract, Mercy Air 20, our air provider. And then we'd also start jumping into our automatic aid and mutual aid agreements. So CAL FIRE, SOMOCO, all those entities will start coming on base, including
King City,
including AMR, King City as well. Mm-hmm. And then if we're talking about incidents off base, this capability cannot be utilized until that agreement is there.
But that's imminent.
I'm hoping by next week they go, yeah, let's 100% support it. But that's going to be on them and their medical group to allow us to go off base.
You guys are first responders for any medical emergency, whether it's on Highway 101 or Lockwood or whatever, right?
Yeah, so we currently right now, if requested, we'll respond in engine, ALS or BLS off base, depending on staffing that we have. Those services or our scopes and policies are all within the county. Off base, if we're requested, we'll provide that to the highest level possible. That does not include whole blood right now. So whole blood is kind of a separate pinnacle that I'm hoping to get to. And next Tuesday, hopefully I'll have a good decision that they're willing to support, which I don't see why they wouldn't support it, because there's no cost to them. We're providing a service that is extremely beneficial to the community in Southern Monterey County, as well as Northern San Luis Obispo County.
We have a little cooler. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this cooler that I have right here with me, it's a Pelican. It's called the Crito cooler. Like what I said, it's pretty much a Yeti cooler. It's like a little lunchbox size.
Is there a battery operated?
No.
It's all.
No, there's no battery at all.
It's insulation.
It's really cool. So we'll open it up and kind of walk you through the system here. So always on top, we have the paperwork that comes from the blood bank, right? So that's the tracking paperwork that gives them a lot number that's tracked all the way back to that patient. So if we do have an issue with a reaction that the patient has been given, or a age-bearing woman that can have children, we want to make sure that there's not a reaction with the fetus and the mother. So this is all kind of tests back to the blood bank, just like the civilian blood bank. It's all the same tests, it's all the same documentation, but two different systems. One's military and one's the civilian. So inside this unit, we have this packaging, and this packaging is vacuum sealed. It's, to me, it's not really super crazy, but it's just a vacuum sealed package right there. And then within inside that, we have the tick cooler. And in here, take that off real quick, is our tick. So this is the Crito EMT blood cooler. And what we do is pull it out, and there's a lid. So this is just a insulated lid that keeps, it's like a gel or water in there. I don't know exactly what it is, but this is one of the components that we do to freeze. And then this is the other unit that we freeze for. They're called TICs, so a thermal insulation container is what that is how we call it. This current unit in here we have is expired, so we're testing this newer TIC right now. But if you feel it, it's cold, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't like blood over there. So if you notice that this is an RH low negative blood, which is still the same thing. It's an O blood, but it's a low titer blood. It's not an O positive, it's an O negative. It still does the exact same thing that we want it to do. So in here you have all your blood, you got all your labels, you name it, all the labels go with all the paperwork. And then they have these little, I forget what the blood bank calls them, but they're little vessels or ticks. Mm-hmm. Those you break apart or cut apart. And that's what the receiving hospital, the receiving blood bank hospital will actually utilize. And they will test that blood against their blood once they've been admitted to the hospital. So those are critical to stay with a patient because they test to say, okay, well, was it a recipient of the blood or was it a donor issue? And that's more a really smart person that's into blood a lot more than I am. And then inside that, we have our little temperature regulator. And that takes readings. You can set it to whatever interval you want. Ours is currently every hour, and we take the readings, and it gets printed out as all the data, and it shows.
It's a wireless.
It's a wireless signal, yeah. And then it just all stays.
So again, a naive question. I was only EMT-1 back in the day.
Yeah.
You respond to a trauma incident and you know you have to get some blood into the patient. You have to test their blood type.
No. So that's why
we're... That's because you're the O positive.
That's why we're using O positive, yeah.
So it becomes a non...
It's non... Yep. And then they always talk about the risk versus gain, right? So what if this patient does have a reaction to it? Well, then you can go the what if the opposite way. What if the person doesn't receive blood and they die? You know, so it's kind of like... Which way do you want to go? If you're dying and you're showing signs and symptoms that you're hypovolemic shock, I'm going to give you blood. Now, if I save you and you have a reaction, or you have a female that has an issue bearing children, well, they're still around to have the capability of raising that child.
So that's on board?
This
right now?
This is right now on the ambulance. Yep. Okay. This will be on our ambulance, ready to go, ready to rock and roll whenever we do it. The Surgeon General team did utilize or kind of identify that maybe we won't be a high use installation, and they were okay with that. If we can utilize it twice a year, great. If we don't utilize it once a year, I'm fine with that. It means there wasn't a patient that needed it, but at least gives us the tools and capacity that if we do have a serious incident here on base, since we're remote, that I can provide the best level of care to that patient to keep them alive to the emergency department, to the trauma surgeon.
Captain Hagee, thank you so much for visiting. What a great, fascinating morning.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. And, you know, I'm always here to get the best capability for us out there. You know, I also enjoy working with our neighbors and resource personnel, you know, Cal Fire and everybody else on and off base, that we want to be the pinnacle of providing the best care possible to our patients, civilian or military.
All right. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Fort Hunter Liggett Army Reserve Base in Monterey County.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, conserving the past to inspire future generations of dreamers and preserving the legacy of Julia Morgan. To learn more about how to become a member and experience authentically curated historical events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. These experiences are unparalleled in their historical accuracy and grandeur, and you too can savor the experience by becoming a supporting member of the Foundation at Hearst Castle. To learn more, log on to foundationathearstcastle.com.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station. Thank you.